for most of my life, virtual reality has been this fantastic sci-fi promise that never quite gets there. Now, suddenly, it's a real thing, a pretty amazing thing that any of us will be able to experience whenever we want.
Facebook will acquire virtual reality technology company Oculus VR, $2 billion in cash and stock.
Oculus VR will start selling its affordable state-of-the-art setup early next year, and there will be even cheaper ones.
Facebook's Oculus is teaming with Samsung, unveiling a new version of the Gear virtual reality headset for $99.
Google has even made a low-end cardboard version you can wrap around your smartphone to turn it into a virtual reality viewer. And if you subscribe to the New York Times, you recently got one in your Sunday paper. The future is here. So I decided to get myself to Stanford's Virtual Human Interaction Lab, one of the pioneering research centers, to get the lowdown.
Hi.
The lab manager, Shawnee Bauman, took me into one of their test facilities, a pretty generic institutional space the size of a small classroom, where she hooked me up so I could experience virtual realities. That is, fantasies far more realistic than any movie or video game I'd ever seen or played.
You can slip this on like a pair of goggles.
Okay. With my glasses, are okay?
Yeah, you can put it over your glasses. Does that feel okay?
Uh-huh.
All right.
It was intense.
Yikes! Oh, f***!
And that was before I'd even done anything. What's so extraordinary about high-end virtual reality is that I'm wearing this headset that weighs maybe a pound, and no matter where I move and any direction I look, up, down, side to side, I'm inside this other totally photorealistic reality. There's never that point where you glance past the end of the screen and see the real world. There is no end of the screen. And while I guess I expected to find myself in some simulated exotic location, the first place they took me was differently mind-blowing. An exact digital replica of the room I was standing in. With one exception, when I turned around and looked down, there was now a piece of lumber on the floor.
Okay, so what I'm looking at is this, not only this, I don't know, 15-foot cubicle pit below me with rust stains, so it looks like people have been killed here. And the board goes across from the platform to the side, and I can tell you're going to say, walk on this wobbly board to the other side.
And I did, very carefully walk across that make-believe board to the other side. My rational mind knew this wasn't real, but my senses completely disagreed. My lizard brain was unambiguously warning me that if I slipped, I'd fall to the bottom and maybe break an arm or a leg. I hadn't had a fantasy experience this disconcertingly real since, I don't know, 1974 when I was dropping acid. It's a hybrid of real life and dream, really like no other.
What makes VR special is this aha moment.
That's Jeremy Balinson, the founder and director of the Virtual Human Interaction Lab at Stanford.
When you walked over that plank, for that moment, your heart started beating.
I used a word that I can't say, according to the FCC, on the radio as a result of walking across that plank.
I don't have a formal statistics on this, but some substantial proportion of subjects who go over that plank use that exact word.
So now that virtual reality is within weeks of becoming a consumer product that costs no more than a smartphone or a video game console, what's that going to mean? Obviously, gaming will be the mass market app at the start. And surely, as with so many new technologies over the last century when they were new, porn.
We wouldn't have an internet if it weren't for pornography, and virtual reality is going to have some of the same movers.
But there'll also be other, more interesting, even noble applications.
My name is Chris Milk. I'm a director, an artist, a technologist, and an inventor sometimes.
For the last couple of decades, Chris Milk has been one of the most successful directors of music videos, and lately making videos that were interactive and web-based. In 2013, for instance, Milk worked with Beck to turn David Bowie's sound and vision into this 360-degree interactive film. a really ambitious project that was sort of inspirational for Milk.
The infrastructure to shoot live action being real people, real faces, real environments, doesn't really exist. The infrastructure shoot is about capturing rectangles right now. That's what all our movie cameras are, is recording rectangles, and you splice those rectangles together into a linear narrative. And if you're going to shoot live action for virtual reality, you need cameras that look in all directions.
And so, to enter this new post-rectangle age, he invented a contraption that was really just a sphere of strapped-together GoPro cameras. You know, those cheap little wearable cameras you can mount on almost anything. So Chris and his team put their ball of GoPro cameras on a tripod, pointing out in every direction, and started experimenting. Pretty quickly, Chris realized everything he'd learned in film school in the 90s.
This is how you make a movie. This is how the opening scene of a movie works.
Not much of that stuff applied to shooting virtual reality, because shooting in 360 degrees, as Jeremy Bailenson at Stanford explained, makes it impossible to focus the camera on any one thing.
Directors are brilliant because they tell you when to look and where to look. In VR, I'm looking on the other side of the room. I'm looking at the plant that looks really cool, and I'm looking at how the light goes off it, and I get to look wherever I want.
And while that means it's really hard to make a movie or tell a story in any traditional sense, the profound upside of virtual reality is it enables you to transport a viewer to a different place more realistically and immersively than ever before, which Jeremy and his research team at Stanford are finding has implications beyond just, whoa, awesome coolness.
It turns out that this lesson, when you walk a mile in someone's virtual shoes, when you actually wear their body, this resonates.
And it's that ability of virtual reality to enable deeper, more visceral empathy that sent Chris Milk and his team to the Middle East to shoot their first full-fledged VR film.
We walked for days crossing the desert into Jordan. The week we left, my kite got stuck in a tree in our yard. I wonder if it is still there. I want it back.
It's a short documentary about a real Syrian girl named Sidra who is living in a refugee camp in Lebanon. The film follows her as she takes you into the tent her family lives in, the place she goes to school, the sand patch where she plays soccer with her friends.
I have lived here in the Za'atari camp in Jordan for the last year and a half. I have a big family, three brothers. One is a baby. He cries a lot.
I've spoken to people who have seen the film who actually have been to that camp and felt that it absolutely gave you a sense of what it was like to be there.
Like being inside Sidra's family's tent while they make dinner.
We're doing that because we have a camera and we're just sticking it places and people are like, oh, cool. It doesn't feel the same as if another person was standing 2 feet away from them.
And by just inserting this camera, that is a whole bunch of cameras, into the situation, Chris creates an uncannily intimate experience because the viewer feels as if she's there, a couple of feet away from the refugee, surrounded by them and their stuff. After the Sidra film, Chris and his team made another about the Millions March, the protest demonstration in response to the police killing of Eric Garner in New York, and another inside an Ebola clinic in Liberia. And he just finished a project with the New York Times and Google Cardboard about child refugees.
I do think that there's a tremendous amount of good that can come out of this medium. There's something really powerful about sitting in the same room with another person and hearing them tell you their story. The way that you feel about them changes. You feel their humanity in a different way. You feel it in a deeper way. It's different than television. It's different than radio. It's different than cinema. It's different than literature.
Exactly how is it different?
That's what we're trying to figure out.